Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, and all those listening around the world, we're back. Yeah, you didn't get the excited. We're back. Well, that's right. It's another episode of, actually, it's the first episode of season two, Drinking with the Devil, with your host. I'm Thomas.
And I'm Heather.
And we are remaining on our mental health regimens, which means we don't kill people. And if we do, we don't tell people. Because if you want to keep a secret, the best way to keep a secret between two people is if one of them is...
Dead!
Which is kind of like a catch-22, because Valentine's Day is coming up, and Heather likes dead stuff.
I do.
So maybe I could do Valentine's Day shopping and tell a secret at the same time. But then I'd have a whole nother secret. Job security. Every year I tell someone my secret.
No, he's going to tell somebody one of my secrets.
No, I don't want to die too. Well, that being said, we are drinking spicy white Russians. This is the Russian that would have an OnlyFans account. That's right. Ooh, buddy. And it's good. It's stout. Season two, we're going to go a little bit darker than we did season one. Because I'm actually looking. I'm researching cases where murders lead to hauntings.
Dun, dun, dun.
And what a lot of you don't know about Miss Heather, she is, that's right, educated in crime scene investigations. Degree in everything. Top of her class.
4.0. Woo-woo. And that just means, kids, that since I know how to go look for a body in the woods, I know how to make it to where nobody's going to find the bodies that I put in the woods.
Well, this week, we're going all the way to Fall River.
Whenever he gets done laughing.
Yeah. We're going all the way to Fall River, Massachusetts. Who can tell me what happened in Fall River, Massachusetts in the 1880s?
Lizzie Borden took an axe and gave her mother 30 whacks.
When she seen what she done, gave her father 41. 31. That's right. And no, she didn't hit either one of them 30 or 40 times. But it was close. Just saying. And if they'd have used the actual number of whacks, it wouldn't have rhymed as well. You know, it's political license. Or political. It is poetic licensing, okay? So to give you a little bit, and I mean a brief history of Miss Lizzie Borden. Lizzie Borden was born to Sarah Anthony Jane Borden. Miss Jane Borden was born September 19th, 1823, in Somerset, Bristol, Massachusetts. She died March 26, 1863, in Fall River, Massachusetts. When Lizzie was born, she was 36 years old, which is kind of late in life to be having children by today's standards. Back then, that was probably more common. But they should have had probably more than, like, three kids, too.
Dude, they started at, like, 14.
Yeah, so...
And literally just...
36, she'd have been, like, a spinster.
She was... Yeah.
Yeah. Mr. Andrew Jackson Borden. Couldn't have gave that asshole a better name. Andrew Jackson was an asshole. This guy is supposedly an asshole. We'll discuss that more later. But he was born September 13th, 1822, in Troy, Bristol, Massachusetts, to Abraham and Phoebe Borden. He started his career as an undertaker building caskets. He later got rich, dealing in real estate. He remarried when Lizzie was 4 years old to Abby Durfee Gray. Andrew was described as being unpleasant, cold, a tyrannical patriarch, and a miser. Later, he was accused of being a child molester. Bum, bum, bum. Accused, never convicted. Let's make sure we put that fact out there.
That's because back in those days, unless you were doing it in the middle of the road, or you were being accused of witchcraft,
nobody really cared.
Nobody really cared.
This is true. So, in 1887, it is said that Lizzie stopped calling Abby mother and started referring to her as Mrs. Borden. This would have put Lizzie about 27 years old, a little late in life for a rebellious stage. 5 years later, Abby and Andrew Borden were murdered. So we're going to talk about that aspect right there, where at 27 years old, Lizzie stops referring to Abby as mother. It's kind of an odd age to just stop.
Yeah, something changed there.
23 years. And Lizzie never graduated from high school, as I understand from my research. But she gave her father a ring. That was kind of something you did when you were pursuing someone. You gave them your class ring. Well, yeah. I mean, stopping and looking at it, double check my records here because I know I'm going to say the wrong date, so I'm going to look it up just to make sure. She would have been 64 years old at the time of her death. So that would have put her at 59, which is a common age for women to lose their sex drive. And if the rumors were true, Andrew was he was quite the frisky feller. Possibly the resentment, and this is speculation, there's absolutely no evidence to back this up, but it is possible that the reason Lizzie stopped calling Abby mother is because Mr. Borden started taking Lizzie as a
equal.
Not even an equal, a sex subordinate. Because he was very, very strict with money. Which, if Lizzie felt like Abby knew that this was going on and done nothing to stop it, because at 59 years old, chances are Abby was probably just grateful he wasn't climbing on top of her.
Right.
Abby, or Lizzie, may have felt resentment towards Abby for not having put a stop to it. Or, if we go the other way with it, maybe Lizzie was resentful of Abby because she now viewed her father as her partner. And sometimes the present day girlfriend doesn't care too much for the previous.
True that.
So, there's a lot of speculation that can go on either way there. I got a nice little kicker for the end of this to wrap it all up into a nice pretty little bow for everyone though. And if it's true, it changes everything. So, we're going to go down the timeline of what happened on the day of the murders, because we all know how this story goes. Everyone dies.
That's usually, you know, the good stories.
Alright, so August 3rd, 1892, Lizzie attempts to buy poison from the local pharmacy, but is unable to because she does not have a prescription for said poison. Now, it was never confirmed to have been Lizzie, but the pharmacist was positive it was Lizzie, and the reason they claimed to have wanted said poison was to protect a baby seal coat. It was something to condition the leather, I guess. No evidence that it actually was Lizzie, but most women murder by poison.
For many years, it has been said that poison was the woman's way to... It's quick, it's... You don't have to get your hands dirty. It doesn't take a lot of force.
Very easily snuck into food, drink. I can't remember what it was called. I'm going to have to look it up now. But there was a woman who, quote unquote, made a perfume that was literally all it was poison for women to kill their husbands who beat them or raped them. Or
that lady made a whole lot of perfume. It wasn't even perfume.
No, she just called it perfume. That's she how she sold it. She called it
perfume, yeah.
You had to come and ask for this specific scent of perfume. But back to the Lizzie Borden. She tried on the 3rd to purchase poison. Was unsuccessful. Doesn't say what kind of poison. But we'll move on. So the next day, August 4th, 1892, at 9:30 a.m., Abby Borden is killed while cleaning the house. August 4th, 1892. Andrew Borden is murdered around 11:30 a.m. August 6, 1892, so 2 days later, a funeral is held for Abby and Andrew. August 7, 1892, Lizzie Borden burns a dress. Alice Russell, a family friend of the Bordens, observes Lizzie burning a blue dress in the kitchen stove. Lizzie claimed that the dress was stained and of no use. It was this testimony at the inquest that prompted Judge Blaisdell of the 2nd District Court to charge Lizzie with the murders. August 9th, inquest is held. An inquest closed to the public is held to consider the murders of Andrew and Abby Borden. August 11th, Lizzie is arrested. August 12th, Lizzie enters a plea of not guilty. Lizzie is moved to jail in Taunton, 8 miles north of Fall River. On the 22nd, a preliminary hearing is held. Judge Josiah Blaisdell, finds that there is probable cause to try Lizzie for murder. She is indicted on the 2nd of December, and the trial begins June 5th, the next year. During the trial, the skulls of Andrew and Abby Borden fall out of the bag, and Lizzie passes out. So they had a funeral without the skulls present.
Okay, now how long was it between the death and the trial?
The trial began June 5th of 1893.
So 6 months? 7 months.
No, it would have been right at 11 months, almost a year. Because they were murdered in August and the trial began June.
Dude.
So it would have been 10 months.
Ain't no way you're going from full flesh to skull in 10 months without some help.
No, that was because of the autopsy. They skinned the skull to count the strikes. And instead of taking pictures, which would have been available at the time, they brought in the actual skulls.
You can't naturally deflesh anthill nothing that quickly. There's too much, tendons, and there's things like that. They had to pull out some. They either boiled these people's skulls.
They probably boiled it or used an acid.
Or, I was thinking the bugs, the beetles.
They could have done beetles. I don't know. They don't give us a lot of detail on the...
That's just...
You gotta remember, this was pre-modern day crime scene. They let people walk. The entire town walked through the crime scene.
They did that with a freaking Black Dahlia case, too.
Oh, that's what...
And photographers trooping all over the scene, taking pictures of his shorts, hoodies, and whatnots, and... innards.
It took 15 days for them to quit Lizzie Borden. That was a long trial for those days.
Yeah, because I'm going to guarantee that half the people thought she did it and half the people thought she didn't, and they had to fight about it.
Well, again, this is stuff that can't be proven because it's strictly hearsay. But one of Lizzie Borden's nurses in her older years, could have been in her 80s, apparently told the nurse, because the nurse asked, did you ever have any suspicion of who could have done it? And she says, oh, I know who did it. I had a boyfriend who my father did not approve of. That is the first time a boyfriend had ever been mentioned, that whole situation. And it makes a lot of sense, the anger. Because if she'd have said, my daddy is doing stuff to me, that made me to where I was not, in those days, it was more at that they would want you pure. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. So you had an entirely terrible case that was just pushed through by a bunch of cops who never really dealt in murder. There was never a hidden murder. It was always something that was out in the open and very public.
These two guys got drunk in the pub and they started brawling out front.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And you got Andrew Jackson Borden, which if you know anything about President Andrew Jackson, he was quite the... douche nozzle. So the name kind of fits if the rumors are true. But you've got him, who is very stern and stingy with money, refuses to... They had indoor plumbing in their basement only.
Isn't that strange?
His house was once a duplex that they converted into a house. He was very well off, but believed having material possessions was sinful. Lizzie was a klepto, and when she would get caught, he would be like, oh, just pay the bill. So she's sitting here trying her hardest to basically show out. It does not surprise me that she had a boyfriend who was, Johnny B. Bad.
Of course.
Women always love the bad guy.
Preacher's daughters.
I'm telling
you. Are the wildest ones.
Now, in other rumors, Andrew Borden sent his daughters to England just to send them for vacation. He purchased them a house and they were to rent the house out, and that would be a source of income for them to make their own money. They didn't like that. They were horrible landlords. So here comes Andrew having to come up behind his daughters and clean up their mess because they have tenants that they are not tending to.
Right.
So maybe, possibly, probably, you had two spoiled rich girls who wanted, and felt like they deserved, they were owed, and a father who was trying to teach them responsibility. And that was one lesson that just was not going to get through.
Because if both the Borden parents died, they inherited everything.
Yeah, Lizzie did, and she actually ended up selling the house that they were murdered in, which makes sense.
Yeah, you don't live there.
I would, but I'm weird like that. I'd have like a Ouija board.
What would the neighbors think if your parents died in the house and you just live in there like ain't shit going on?
Here's the thing.
It's already bad enough that you're living in the same town where you supposedly murdered your folks and you got acquitted for it. So they're already going to be going, oh my God, you know, whispering. And, you know, as soon as you walk into a place, everybody's looking at you.
So Lizzie and her sister were basically outcasts. But when they sold the house, they bought like this mansion that they felt they were deserved in the same town.
Oh, yeah. At that point, it was a their noses in it.
And Miss Lizzie was also known to be very friendly with a stage actor, or actress, I should say, which was very uncommon for the times.
You know.
It is believed that she was in a romantic relationship with said actress.
Okay, I'm not going to say, I'm going to put it, it was not uncommon. It's never been.
It was unspoken.
Uncommon. The uncommonness of that kind of situation, that kind of relationship in that day and age, was the openness of said.
Well, it wasn't technically open, but it was very well known by the servants. And if anybody knows anything about servants,
they
like to gossip.
They know everything.
They know.
They see you at your best, they see you at your worst.
And they like to talk about your worst because that brings you down to
their level. You're human again, yeah.
Now, that being said, let's talk about, and we're not even talking about the Axe Murder House yet. So, the woman who owns the Lizzie Borden House purchased Maplecroft and was preparing to open the building to the public. The previous owners had told her it was not haunted, but once she and her employees spent time there, they started witnessing a lot of activity. They would hear loud footsteps, disembodied voices of a woman, and laughter at strange times. Before we started investigating, we brought Chip Coffey in to get his impressions of the home. So he wouldn't see where he was or get any clues that might influence his reading, we brought him in blindfolded. If you know me, you know this following phrase annoys the hell out of me, but this is a direct quote, so I can't change it. "All of a sudden, I'm very agitated and upset," he said. "There's a sense of being out of control. I'm being hit by every kind of emotion. I'm trying to get a grip on my emotions, and I just can't. I hear, 'Stop! Leave me alone!'" He was picking up the spirit of a woman who was getting increasingly angry. "You all think you know everything," he reported her saying. "You know nothing about me." She's screaming, "Don't help me," Chip added. Then repeated more of her words. "You got him blindfolded. You think you're smart. I don't care what you think. I have to look right. I won't crack. I'm sorry." This is a aggressive spirit at best. As part of our research, we spoke with historian Christopher Daly about Lizzie. "It's America's Jack the Ripper case," he said. "People are going to be talking about it forever." Christopher went on to explain why Lizzie chose to remain in Fall River, when almost the entire town had turned on her, suspecting her of murdering her parents, and even though she had been acquitted of the crime. She said, "When the truth comes out about this murder, I want to be living in Fall River so that I can walk downtown and meet those of my friends who have been cutting me down all these years." That is not a phrase of someone who committed the murders.
No.
My only question is, if it truly was a boyfriend, did she not say because she had feelings for him and wanted to give him a running head start? Well, why wouldn't she be like, "He killed my whole family"? I guess it being her boyfriend, though, it could also be looked at as she had part. It kind of makes sense.
Yeah, I was going to say, sometimes it's better to not say shit than to try to implicate somebody else who could implicate
He also told us a key piece of information after the trial. Lizzie adopted a new name, Lizbeth. That's what's on her gravestone, even though her birth name is Lizzie, and it's how she chose to be addressed for all her adult life. The night before, we had gotten an EVP, electronic voice phenomenon, for those of you who don't know, response of the name Lizzie Borden. We really thought we might have been talking to her, but beside that one answer, she hadn't said much of anything. From what Chip indicated, she did not care to speak more. That doesn't make sense, because why would you be so aggressive and then not?
Hey?
That sounds like a fear aspect. You know, the dog in the corner barks real hard before he pees himself and cowers. Thinking she had given us her name as a sassy response, Adam suggested approaching that night's investigation in a different way. By removing all the things in the home that discussed murder in any way, we need to make her comfortable if we're going to get any answers. We need to make this feel like her home, he said. He's on the same page as I am. She's uncomfortable. She's almost fearful. We need to take away any form of discomfort and try to make her feel like we are here on her behalf, not accusing her. Because, hell, she went 25 years being accused and then another 100 being accused.
Right.
Because you know a lot of paranormal investigators, or as I like to call them, they's the ghost hunters. You know, anytime someone refers to themselves as a ghost hunter, you know instantly they're not about the scientific method. They're not. Because if they're about the scientific method, they don't say we're ghost hunting. We're doing a paranormal research or investigation. We want to find out if something is here, what it is, how it got here. We want to... Ghost hunters are just looking for something spooky. I hate when people refer to themselves as ghost hunters. I'm a ghost hunter. I've been on several investigations, and there was this one time when something touched it to me, and I could feel it, and I knew it was a little girl, and when I turned around, there was nothing there.
She stuck her finger in my butthole.
Right in my butthole. All up in there. She woo-wooed it around. It was horrible. So that evening, we set about making Maplecroft an axe murder-free zone, narrating our actions as we went so she would see and hear what we were doing. We made sure to speak of her using the name she chose to go by as a sign of respect, and we reassured her that we only had good intentions and didn't want to exploit or sensationalize her past. Then we set up a spirit box experiment designed to make Lizbeth feel as comfortable as possible. I went upstairs to the sitting room while Adam stayed downstairs and asked questions through a walkie-talkie. These are direct quotes from their investigation. And as you know, I can't resist but to do voices, so. My friend is Amy upstairs, he said. Oh, this is the guy, sorry. My friend is Amy upstairs, he said. I'd love for you to reach out to her, please. Can you tell her your name? Lizbeth, you're going to have a lot of people coming in here to try to talk to you. And most of those people are going to try to talk about directly. Yes, they're going to try to talk to you directly. I'm lost. The people that own this house now also own the house. Don't say anything. It's not me. People are going to ask you about what happened on 2nd Street. We're trying to warn you and let you know to see if that's okay with you. Please talk to them. Are you there? So you're saying it's okay for people to come talk to you about your past. Come back. What would you like to talk about? I felt someone walking through the room, but no one was there. Do you miss someone, Lizbeth, from your past? You get used to it. I'm upset. What are you upset about? Stop. Stop it. Alone. I tried. We had just had a full conversation with the ghost of Lizbeth Borden, maybe for the first time ever. I was hearing full sentences, which almost never happen with ghosts' replies in EVP sessions or spirit box experiments. It was hard to hear, though she seemed so conflicted and lonely. I think the only reason that Lizbeth chose to speak to us is that we broke the ice with her and treated her with kindness, even though we were looking for one of the most sought-after spirits of all time, who may or may not have been a murderer. We don't know for sure. I do know that she has a lot of people calling out for her and haven't heard of any other time when she answered. By the end of it, I felt like Lizbeth was my friend, so even though one of the producers was really pushing for us to ask her if she was guilty, we wouldn't do it. We would have violated the trust we built with her and everything we had worked for. Adam and I never asked her if she did it. If we did, we would have been lying to her about the whole time we promised not to talk to her about the murders. The Lizzie Borden case may have been one of the most notorious American true crime stories, but we'll never have any answers, and that's because Lizbeth wanted it that way. There's a law firm in Boston that has all of her files and the paperwork on the case, and they are locked up to this day. She made that firm sign paperwork stating that they would guard that information in perpetuity and never unseal those files. So the answer is sitting just over 50 miles from where the crime happened, and it will never be revealed. It makes a lot of sense, and y'all know I like to break down paranormal investigations. The spirit box. I'm conflicted with the spirit box because anybody can come through, and if they feel like it's going to get what they want across, they can pretend to be anybody they want. So we cannot rule out the fact that it may have been Lizbeth Borden, but we also cannot verify the fact that it was right. Lizbeth and Borden.
With that verbatim, you can't hear it. You don't know if it was the same voice.
Every time.
Because that does radio sweep.
Yeah. I like the Estes method. It's where someone has headphones in, a blindfold, and you ask questions. And it's the spirit box is sweeping, and they answer the questions with whatever they're hearing through the spirit box. They don't know what questions you're asking. They don't know nothing. So it actually adds to, you know, if you, I asked, what is your name? Lizbeth. No, it wasn't me. It would make more sense than... Because you get matrixing when you're searching for something. When you're looking for that answer to come through the spirit box. And from what it sounded like, they may have been doing the Estes method, where someone was blindfolded and he was speaking through the walkie-talkie, which puts his voice through all the different radio frequencies, which would add to the ability to of her hearing. What I would like to see, because according to that, the Borden house and Maplewood were less than 2 miles away. A lot of CB radios.
Carried further than that.
So I would like to see one person in Maplewood, the other one in the Borden house, using CB radios to communicate amongst each other. Almost bringing the two houses, and specifically some form of radio. Maybe not even just UHF, some form of radio. Because I feel like a lot gets lost the more digital we try to go.
Yeah.
And I think using the internet and Skyping between the two, there's the delay, but radio signals are almost instant. Literally, it's what you would call in the tech world, no ping. Because there's no time between when you send something to when it's received. So, I honestly would like to see a investigation done.
And that's the way radio waves or electrical waves sent through the air. And
yeah. So it would be interesting for me to see it done.
They're not much more than free electrical impulses in the air.
I honestly have a belief that the spirit realm is... We know about neutrons and we know about protons, but I think the spirit realm would be a form of energy that we don't know about yet.
Electrons.
Well, I mean, that's... Neutrons and protons are electrons.
Yeah, but they're free, just one free negative. Electrons.
What I'm saying, I feel like... Okay, so in nature, you got the magic numbers. 3, 6, 9. Damn good time. But,
so stupid.
3, 6, and 9 show up in almost everything. Except for electricity. You don't see it with electricity. So I feel like there's something out there that we haven't found yet. We don't understand it yet. There's a third Tron out there. Like a Megatron. I don't know.
That was a Transformer.
Yeah. Actually, it was a Decepticon. But, 80s. Decepticons, roll out. That's Autobots, I know.
Still a Transformer.
It was. It was a Autobot. Optimus Prime, which I'm really proud of Optimus Prime's cousin. He took on a job as a delivery guy. He's Amazon Prime. Dad joke. I feel like that investigation was very well done. And you know I'm not a big fan of the mediumships as evidence of a haunting. I believe they make really good base, almost like controls. But when you try using them as diehard evidence, you get the problem with people who just want to be famous. They want, like Ed and Lorraine Warren. Not saying that anything they ever done was fake, except for everything they ever done. I'm just saying that they were fake.
I've noticed some of the truest sensitives
don't want recognition for it.
They don't even know. They don't even know that they're sensitive. Like, well,
they don't put themselves in that situation a whole lot, so they don't. And until it comes out and it's well known that this person is a sensitive, then ghosts don't flock to them. It's not until they realize, hey, this person can hear me, this person can see me, this person can feel me, this person knows I'm here.
You got psychic sensitives. I mean, and it doesn't even have to be for ghosts and stuff.
No, it can be
a lot anything. Of them don't even know, and they don't.
They don't understand.
They don't understand. They take it. It comes to them as something's, I don't feel right. Good. My stomach hurts.
Why are these people always ignoring me?
My neck hurts. My head hurts. You know.
I'm a firm believer that psychic mediums are great for a base sweep.
And I don't know, man. I've never truly come across a psychic medium. But I've known when I was being probed by somebody else, like psychically.
Yeah.
Because I always got it like, it's like somebody pinching at the base of your skull. And it's
a headache, but it's not a pain.
Yeah,
it's
like pressure. It's just like somebody like pinching or touching like, yeah, at the base of your head. Pressure. It's like, whoa, what do you stop? And you turn around and look at him like, excuse me, can I help you? Yeah. I think one of my fellow managers might be a little sensitive.
Oh, they're all. Oh, wait, you're talking about spiritually sensitive.
I'm talking about like just.
They're all snowflakes.
No, I'm not talking. Chick is. She's not snowflakey.
Oh, she gangster?
She gangster.
All right, it's about time.
I think she's sensitive. Like, every time we have to go to one of these little meetings, she's like, I don't feel good.
Well, that's just because the White Walker's there.
Yeah, well.
I'm very proud he was down and get 90 below freezing.
Right? Strange.
Very.
Strange, but he was pretty chill today.
The White Walker's been slayed.
No, he's still.
When it comes to mediums, I just have a distaste in them because you get, like most haunted. We used to watch that show Once in a Blue Moon, and you'd always have that one guy. I feel the spirit among us. His name is Roy. There's literally never been anybody by the name of Roy. No, you just don't know about Roy because Roy was here. There's literally never been anybody by the name of Roy that's ever stepped foot on this property. We have factual evidence.
That's one of the things is I've been in places that were inhabited by something else. And it doesn't go down like that.
No.
It doesn't. It doesn't go down like that. It's like you're walking, you get a cold sweat, and you're like, oh shit, excuse me. And that's literally what comes out. I'm sorry. Ooh. Like, I just came in your spot. I'm sorry. Hello. I'm so sorry.
Better. Excuse me. How are you? Hey.
Hey, how are you?
Hi. Because you feel it come up on you.
Yeah,
because
it comes at you. Say hello. Hello. Oh, oh, oh.
I wish we still had the picture from when we went to the bayou.
I bet you mom does.
I bet you she does. But when I was telling something to take my energy and mom took the picture.
And it was literally.
Right in my face.
She was forming in front of you.
Yeah.
You said take it and she said, okay.
Take my energy, speak to us, and you got.
Yes, an ectoplasmic.
It was there.
Formation. Yeah.
And that was the same night we got the scream.
Yeah, but I'm not sure if that was a bobcat.
I think it was a panther.
Or a panther. There is
but we didn't hear.
There is a panther out in
Howard's Creek.
Howard's Creek, because I've rolled up on that mofo.
But we didn't hear the scream. It wasn't until later when we were viewing the. Yeah. So
That was horrifying, too, rolling up on that freaking U-Jazz cat laying up in that fucking tree. And I had the kids and the little 4x4 little gator that their grandparents owned. And I'm just like, shit. And the kids were like, what? And I just kind of pointed up and they looked up like, kitty. And I'm like, big ass kitty. Yeah,
well, it's called kitty. A Florida panther for a reason. And people claiming, oh, there's no panthers.
No, it was big and it was black.
Yeah, that's
and it the cracked Florida open. Panther. One eye decided that we were not worthy.
It wasn't hungry.
We were not worthy of any more attention because he was sunning. It was a nice day. He's better laying in his little tree branch. And we wheeled our asses backwards as fast as we could and went another way.
She probably felt the mother kitten.
Oh, I'm sure she felt the mother kitty energy coming off of me. And the respect that I give that cat was... Hello, kitty. Okay, we're gonna leave now because you're napping. Excuse us. Because that's what you do when you run across a cat that's your size. When you have hands as big as my head, I'm not gonna muss with you. You know, I'm not down with murder mittens that size. Sorry. I'd like to face where it is.
Right. But back to what I was saying, I do believe very firmly in psychic mediums. We got Michelle Caparelli, who is a family friend of Barbara's. We have Barbara. We know people who are mediums.
Yeah.
We just... And if Michelle told me, she walked into my house right now and said, there's a little girl here named Liza, I would instantly believe her. But if I was doing it for anybody else but myself, if I was doing it for you as an audience... I would not take her directly at her word. I would say, okay, we have this to go by. And then I would use the name Liza throughout the night. We heard that there's a Liza here. Liza, can you hear me? I would not dead set. I would not focus on it, but I would throw it out on occasion.
There is a little person in our house.
I don't think her name is Liza, though.
A non-corporeal little person, but I don't know what their name is. I don't see them very often.
So, quick story. Give you a little rundown. When we first got the house, there was a cat in the basement that wasn't our cat. Well, I went to go chase it because we are the fucking... We are Katmandu at this point. We have cats everywhere. I chase it under the floorboards of the bedroom, and there's no cat now. But there's a fucking doll. And Thomas doesn't do fucking dolls. And I'm not talking about sex dolls. I'm talking about fucking evil-possessed little demonic...
He doesn't like dolls.
No. No. So, I knew from a very early point that there was something beyond what I had
expected. Well, I found things in the house when we were moving in and...
Yeah, well, that was the first, like, boom, hi, how are you? Me chasing a cat, and then suddenly my biggest fear, it was basically saying, remember, this is mine. It
was asserting its dominance. Moving in, like literally moving our shit into the house. Dagan and I came with a load of stuff, and I walk in the living room, and there's a little person, a little 4 or 5, blonde, reminded me greatly of the eldest when they were that size, standing at the bay window.
But it wasn't asserting dominance.
No, it was just looking out the window.
With me, it was a assertion of dominance. I know what you're scared of.
And I said, hello. Hello, little one. And I just kept going. And I guess we made friends because you know what? I didn't flinch. I didn't blink. I was carrying a freaking table. Hello, little one. And when I turned around, she was not there anymore. So, you know, it was either shit, I've been spotted, or, okay, she's cool.
Well, you also gotta think, you walked into the house and you're like, oh my God, I love it. I walked into the house and being the mindset I am, the first words out of my mouth when I walked through the house is, ooh, we can change this. I can tear this wall out and do this. Which I did in time end up doing. I did change the layout of the bathroom.
Yes.
But it was almost a year later, and it was after...
It was like 2020.
Yeah, it was 2 years later.
2 years later.
Because it was 2020.
Yeah.
It was when the pandemic hit, and we were getting all that extra money to do nothing. Yeah. So we're like, let's go to Home Depot. Let's get this. Let's do that. Let's redo the bathroom, because
well, between that and bonus money.
Yeah.
Because that was rolling. But going was, in, we gotta re. Well, it was the bathroom is rotting out under our feet. We really need to do something about
she
it.
She realized we weren't coming in just to tear up her home.
No, no. I think what helped was redoing the den. And I was like, I want it to be this shade of blue. And then I pulled down
the most god-awful
mural. God-awful, horrible paneling.
Mural. It was the mural. Mural.
Well, the paneling is god-awful.
The paneling was god-awful, but the mural...
The mural was god-awful. And I pull it out, and...
We live in landlocked Tennessee. There is not a beach for 100 miles in any direction. Why the fuck?
There was one on the den wall, guys.
Do you have a beach mural on your wall? Do a mountain mural. Do a lake mural. Do river.
Do the willow tree in the yard.
Anything.
It's one of the best features of the house to me. There's a willow tree. I love it. Is that a selling point? Yes. Yes, it is. It's like, do you know all the stuff I can do with willow?
But it's just, yeah. You got to go into places, and you do have to show the energy there some form of...
appreciation.
Well, not just appreciation. You've got to go in respectfully.
Respectfully.
And so many ghost hunters go in and, listen here, ye sons of bitches. I know you've been looking at my sister. She's mine.
Gross.
Fucking Zach Baggins.
No, I believe that our house itself is an entity. I do. And Thomas has said so many times, he was like, it's like she speaks through you. You're like, I want to paint this room this color. And then we pull down the paneling and it's the exact same effing color.
Yeah. Well, that being said, we've discussed Lizzie Borden and we've discussed Elizabeth Borden. And we've discussed the house, the murders, and the hauntings. Heather, what you got for us this week?
All right. We're doing Puss in Boots.
She's talking about puss.
In boots. While you're getting hissy, he's just dirty.
Dirty.
Just dirty. Shameful, dirty wretched. This is actually a story about a kid. Cats, kids. Not a... Not... Not a... Yeah.
Not a porn.
Not a porn. Even though, you know, I'm sure they've done it. Once upon a time, there was a poor miller who had three sons. The years went by and the miller died, leaving nothing but his mill, his donkey, and a cat. The eldest son took the mill, the second-born son rode off on the donkey, and the youngest son inherited the cat. Oh well, said the youngest son, I'll eat this cat and make some mittens out of his fur, and I will have nothing left in the world, and she'll die of hunger.
Wow, that's fucking depressing.
Wow.
Well, before I die, I'm gonna eat some pussy.
This kid must have been born in the 2000s.
No, because I hear kids born in the 2000s told me pussy.
Oh, shameful children.
Gen Z, you're failing your ladies. That's
you're failing. Something. You're failing life. That's why you're so angry. That's when they're so angry.
Right?
The cat was listening to his master complain like this, but he pretended not to have heard anything. Because he's a cat. Oh, I didn't get Thomas saying he's changing colors. Oh, instead he put on a serious face and said, "Do not look so sad, master. Just give me a bag and a pair of boots. And I will show you that you did
all
not receive...
All we need is a bag of weed to make you feel good. Bag of weed, a bag of weed. All we need is a bag of weed. You don't need heroin and you don't need speed. All you need is a bag of weed.
And I will show you that you did not receive such a poor inheritance in me. Look, that's just as bad as when Kim looked down at me today and said, oh, look, you're wearing Doc Martens. She was like, do you know how you could tell every lesbian in the 90s? Because that bitch had a pair of Doc Martens in her closet. And I looked at her and I said, Kim, in the 90s, I couldn't afford a pair of Doc Martens, but thank you for that. You're not wrong. I was just like, you know.
And Kim's a lesbian, so she would know.
She's, yeah, very much a lesbian. She's like, girl, that's how you told every pair of lesbians in the 90s, because they had a pair of Doc Martens. And I looked down, I looked at her, and I was like, I couldn't afford those in the 90s. But you're not wrong.
We're having fun, so I'm making my own concoction here.
I'm scared. He ain't gotten to the clue yet. But he done pulled out chocolate vodka. Five Farms single batch Irish cream liqueur. And the spicy Kahlua chocolate chili. I'm going to hear him screaming from the bathroom for a week. Every time he goes by, it burns! I'm a cat! Why did I do that? The devil was in my butthole!
That's only when I walk by a priest. It's like Harry Potter with his scar.
Oh, gracious. I lost track where I was at.
Needed a bag.
Okay. You need a bag and a pair of boots. He was, I will show you that you did not receive such a poor inheritance in me. This is a smart kitty. The cat's master had often seen him playing a great many cunning tricks to catch rats and mice, and when he used to hang himself by the heels or hide himself in the grain and pretend to be dead. Nice.
It tastes like chocolate milk.
Tastes like spicy chocolate milk.
Milk.
Thinking it was over, he thought it wasn't impossible that the cat could help him after all, so he gave the cat his bag and spent his last pennies on ordering a fine pair of boots to be made, especially for the cat. The cat looked very gallant in his boots, and putting his bag around his neck, he held the strings of it in his two forepaws and lay by a rabbit warren, which is home to a great many rabbits. He put bran and corn in his bag and, stretching as if he were dead, waited for some young rabbit, still unacquainted with the deceits of the world, to come and rummage in his bag for the bran and corn. Not long after he lay down, he had what he wanted. A rash and foolish young rabbit jumped into his bag, and Monsieur Puss immediately drew close the strings and caught him. Proud of his prey, he went with it to the palace and asked to speak with his majesty. He was shown upstairs into the king's apartment, and making a low bow, said to him, "I have brought to you, sir, a rabbit of the warren, which my noble lord, the Marquis of Carabas," for that was the title which Puss was pleased to give his master, "has commanded me to present to your majesty for him."
That sounds like a Ford.
Huh?
That sounds like a Ford.
The Marquis de Carabas?
I got the Grand Marquis around the corner over here.
Yeah. "Tell thy master," said the king, "that I thank him, and he does me a great deal of pleasure." Another time he went and hid himself among cornfield, holding still his bag open, and when a brace of partridges ran into it, he drew both the strings, and so caught them both. He went and made a present of these to the king, as he had done before of the rabbit. The king, in like manner, received the partridges with great pleasure, and ordered him some money for drink. In this way the cat continued for 2 or 3 months to bring presents to the king, always saying that they were from his master, the Marquis of Carabas. One day in particular, he heard the palace that the king was planning to drive in his carriage along the riverbank, taking with him his daughter, the most beautiful princess in the world.
Hold up. How come every time they talk about a princess, she's always the most beautiful? How come they're not like the really homely bitch that was the king's daughter?
Fat, with a cleft lip, big nose.
Well, you know, the source of
really
inbred,
strong underbite.
Be like Fred Flintstone looking daughter ass shit. Talking about bam, bam. Wait, that's Barney. Anyways, bam, bam.
Because this is a fucking fairy tale, Thomas. That's why.
It's a fairy tale, all right.
Puss in Boots said to his master, "If you follow my advice, your fortune is made. You have nothing else to do but go and wash yourself in the river, in the place I shall show you, and leave the rest to me." The miller's son did what the cat advised him to do without knowing why or wherefore.
Moral of the story, it doesn't take a lot for a pussy to get a man naked.
While he was washing, the king passed by, and the cat began to cry, "Help, help, my lord, Marquis of Carabas is going to be drowned." At this noise, the king put his head out of the coach window, and finding it was the cat, who had so often brought him such good game, commanded his guards to run immediately to the assistance of his lordship, the Marquis of Carabas. While they were drawing the poor Marquis out of the river, the cat came up to the coach and told the king that while his master was washing, there came by some rogues, who went off with his clothes, though he had cried out, "Thieves, thieves," several times as loud as he could.
"Hey, king, quit looking. It was cold in that river."
This cunning cat had hidden the clothes under a great stone. The king immediately commanded the officers of his wardrobe to run and fetch one of his best suits for the Marquis of Carabas. The king was so very pleased to meet the Marquis, and the fine clothes he had given him suited him extremely well, for although poor, he was a handsome and well-built fellow. The king's daughter took a secret inclination to him, and the Marquis had no sooner cast two or three respectful and somewhat tender glances, but she fell in love with him to distraction. Because, you know, this was the old times, and you didn't live very long.
You don't look like my uncle.
So people fell real quick.
Yeah, they fell all right.
The king invited him to sit in the coach and ride along with them, with the lifeguards in glittering uniform trotting alongside. The cat, quite overjoyed to see his project beginning to succeed, marched on before, and meeting with some countrymen who were mowing a meadow, said to them, "Good people, who are mowing, if you do not tell the king that the meadow you mow belongs to my lord Marquis of Carabas, those soldiers will chop you up like herbs for the pot." The king did not fail asking of the mowers to whom the meadow they were mowing belonged. "To my lord, Marquis of Carabas," answered they all together, for the cat's threats they had made them were terribly afraid. "You see, sir," said the Marquis, "this is a meadow for which never fails to yield a plentiful harvest every year."
I'm sorry, I'm still stuck on the fact that the daughter's sitting there. "You ain't got no britches on, you won't be my boyfriend."
They got him some britches. But she did see his naughty bits.
I see the bad. "Your scepter leaves a little bit to be wanting, but so does my hoo-ha. I ain't got no flowers in that bed, if you know what I mean."
She said, "I hope you're a grower, not a shower." The king, who passed by a moment after, wishing to know to whom all that corn which he then saw did belong. "To my lord Marquis of Carabas," replied the reapers, and the king was very well pleased with it, as well as the Marquis, whom he congratulated. And the king said, "Let us now go to your castle." The miller's son, not knowing what to reply with the pussy, said, "If your majesty will but wait an hour, I will go on before and order the castle to be made ready for you." With that, she jumped away. I didn't know the puss was a girl. And went to the castle.
Hold on. She literally tricks men into doing a bunch of shit that men shouldn't do. And it's successful. It's obviously a woman.
Yes, queen. Yes.
Yeah. Let's be realistic. Could a man talk another man into getting naked into the water and be like, "Hey, go put your bits in this cold ass water"? No.
No.
But a woman goes, "You know, if you put your bits over there, girl." And he'd be like, "They call him Lancelot because if he'd have had a big dick, he'd have been dick a lot."
With that, she jumped away and went to the castle of a great ogre and asked to see him, saying he could not pass so near his home without having the honor of paying his respects to him. The ogre received him as civilly as an ogre could do and bade him sit down. "I have been assured," said the cat, "that you have the gift of being able to change yourself into all sorts of creatures as you wish. You can, for example, transform yourself into a lion or the elephant or the lake, right?" "That is true," answered the ogre very briskly. "And now to convince you, you should now see me become a lion." Puss was so terrified at the sight of a lion so near him. See, he's just switched genders.
Yeah, it's a book.
Yeah.
Gender is fluid.
But they immediately climbed the curtains, and not without difficulty, because his boots were no cooler used to him for climbing. A little while after, the puss saw the ogre resumed his natural form. He came down and admitted that he had been very frightened. "However," said the cat, "I feel that you will not be able to save yourself, even in the form of a lion, for the king is coming with an army and means to destroy you." The ogre looked out the window and saw the king waiting outside with the soldiers and said, "What shall I do? How shall I save myself?" Ogres ain't too bright.
Oh no.
Oh no.
They look like they from the bank.
The puss replied, "If you can also change yourself into something very small, then you can hide." In an instant, the ogre turned himself into a mouse and began to run about the floor. Puss no sooner saw this, but he fell upon him and ate him up. Pussy heard the noise of his majesty's coach running over the drawbridge, ran out and said to his king, "Your majesty is welcome to this castle of my lord Marquis of Carabas." What?
My lord Marquis Carwash?
Carabas.
Carwash.
"What, my lord Marquis," cried the king, "does this castle belong to you? Can there be nothing finer than this court and the stately buildings which surround it? Let's go into it, if you please." The Marquis gave his hand to the princess, and they followed the king, who went first. They passed into a spacious hall, where they found a magnificent rum punch, which the ogre had prepared for his friends, who were that very day to visit him. The friends, however, dared not to enter, knowing that the king was there. His Majesty was perfectly charmed with the good qualities of the Lord Marquis, as was his daughter, who had fallen violently in love with him. And seeing the vast estate he possessed, said to him, after having drunk 5 or 6 glasses, "If you do not, my lord Marquis, become my son-in-law, it will be of your own choosing." They were forward.
Look, you know what, dude, my daughter, I understand. She kind of looks like a bootstrap. But, you know, this day and age, bootstrap ain't that bad. You know, good. You can't do better than good leather. I tell you what, I had me a good leather backpack one time. It lasted 10, 15 years. I'm going to hell, God.
The Marquis, making several low bows, accepted the honor with which his master conferred upon him, and forthwith that very same day married the princess. Puss became a great lord and never ran after mice anymore, except for pleasure.
She double-clicked her mouse for pleasure.
Listen.
Listen. Listen, Linda. Linda, listen.
And the moral of the story goes...
Don't listen to a pussy. It'll kill you.
You can never go wrong with a good pussy, kids.
Jesus Christ, this is going to be an explicit episode. And I'm going to give a specific second warning in the description. We got good. Guys, it has been a month since we drank.
We did that whole dry January thing without even trying.
We didn't. We did the entire month of January. We took off because, you know, mental health issues. We just needed the fucking break.
Because it was January. January sucks.
Dick. And not even good dick. Like uncircumcised, unwashed.
Unwashed. Cheesy, stanky.
It's called smegma.
That's disgusting.
It is. But we did the entire month of January. January dry.
He's been in Tennessee too long, Ken. You should hear the boy.
I just really made a fucking strong ass drink that is fucking me up.
I keep saying I've left these boys here too long because you should hear the youngin', God bless.
I'm so proud.
I can't understand how this shit comes out of his mouth. I'm like, what'd you just say?
No, that's just because he's talking about crazy shit.
No! No, it's that damn accent. I'm like, you ain't even been here, girl. It's not like you were born under a turnip in a holler. You know? I can't say a whole lot because I sound the same goddamn way sometimes.
And she's from Michigan, y'all. I'm from Florida. I come naturally with that southern dignified accent.
He is almost as bad as the landlady we used to have that all I would do is nod and smile at her and look at him and go, what did she say?
What did she say? If we were to encourage ourselves into exfoliating the exterior of our property. Translation, if you don't paint shit, you go ahead and paint shit. I don't give a fuck.
Yeah, she would start talking, I would just start nodding, and I'd be looking at him going, you're going to have to translate that later because I have no idea what the fuck she just said.
Let's be 100% honest. You got 3 forms of Southern. You got dumb Southern, smart Southern, and ritzy Southern. I fluctuate between all 3 very well.
Very well.
I can talk to you the best there is about Dale Earnhardt coming around that racetrack at 135 miles an hour going into that wall. That was a sad and hurtful day for all of us. Or I can tell you how the King of Beers, Bud Light, and Budweiser will always be the King of Beers.
That's
and
disgusting.
And you cannot ever prove me different. Or I can tell you, as a good Southern gentleman, there's nothing beat a good bottle of Southern Kentucky bourbon. I tell you what, Lord have mercy, no.
And I can tell you that shit irks my tater.
Motherfucker, I am Southern as Southern can be.
Or makes my butt want to dip snuff. Or that we're fancy.
I tell you, this is the thing. Heather, I am not what you would refer to as a refined person. I do not do the fancy very well. And that is why I have Miss Heather to encourage me to expand my horizons and read the literature of thus the great novelist as let's say Faulkner or Miss
Love Faulkner.
I know you do.
Mr. Neil Gaiman.
I do love Neil Gaiman.
I can sit there and talk to redneck about how Big and Rich put out a new song, and I tell you what, it's gonna be a good one. Or I can talk to you like a regular human being and you would never know.
You know, there's a character in the Neil Gaiman.
Gaiman.
In Neverwhere, there is a Marquis de Carabas.
Marquis de Carwash, y'all hear that?
Marquis de Carabas. So apparently this dude was saying he was fucking Puss in Boots. Even though he's a big old fat dude, and he didn't look like no puss. And he won't know, I don't know if he was no gender flipping, switching, gender fluid.
I'm just going to say.
But he was the Marquis de Carabas.
Any man that's been that long, I can't press judgment on a man that spent that much time by himself. What he does with his feline friends is what he does with his feline friends. But I will say, if I catch you with a sheep, you sheep fucking motherfucker, I will kick your ass.
That's just gross.
Hey, look, if you go down into a place called Weewahishka, there's this tree that stands out in the middle of the field. Well, that's where I lost my virginity. Her mama walked up. You wouldn't believe what she said to me. She looked dead at me and goes, "Meh."
Gross. So apparently in Weewaw, the men are men and the sheep are scared.
The men are men and the women are too. That being said, this has been a fucked up episode, and guys, we've missed you. It's been a great month off. Don't get me wrong. We really, truly did enjoy our month off. But this is truly our emotional release. We talk all types of shit we don't normally get to talk.
No. Gotta be professional.
We work with the public. We don't get to tell the public the shit we want to. Although here recently.
Even though I do bust up with, "Oh no, we're fancy now. You gotta come see how this thing works."
Yeah.
It's fancy. Hold on. I'll show you how to fix it. I'll show you how to work it.
That being said, guys, season 2 of Drinking with the Devil, I am so grateful that Heather joined me because I honestly didn't think we would make it to season 2. Thank y'all, and I'm grateful for everyone. We're looking forward to seeing where the rest of the year takes us. This has been Drinking with the Devil, signing off.
Hey, ladies and gentlemen, this is Thomas from Drinking with the Devil. I'd like to tell you that we are proudly sponsored by Dubby Energy Supplements. I personally enjoy Dubby because it's a natural energy boost without the shakes, jitters, or crash. I currently have been using it as a morning supplement to start my day, and am looking forward to using it on paranormal investigations in the future, as opposed to using energy drinks that will make you crash. That's dubby.gg, dubby.gg. And if you use promo code DWTD in the cart, you'll receive cash off your purchase. So I would honestly suggest that you try Dubby, because it's worth it. I like it, and I think you would too.